Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Well, good morning to you. It's inching up on 9 minutes after 9 o'clock on this Thursday. It's Mayor Thursday. Now, Mayor Randall's a little bit under weather, but we have, I think this is pretty cool, the new mayor of St. George. You take over the reins. Is it January 1st, technically, Jimmy? Or Jimmy Hughes is here, but or is it like a couple of days out? How does that work?
Yeah, usually it's that first week in January where they'll be swearing in and we'll take over. So until then, the Mayor Randall will keep taking the reins, and she'll do a great job.
Yeah, and she's going to join us next month on her final appearance on the show, and next, the first Thursday of December. But right now we've got Jimmy Hughes here. Jimmy, let's talk about Election Day, right? And I've never run for office. I have no desire to run for office. I have a lot of respect for people like you that do that. I don't know why you want to expose yourself to the abuse that public figures get, but I guess I'm a radio guy and I get some of that too. But tell me how the day unfolded for you. I mean, you really don't know anything, right, for the first part of the day?
Yeah, you don't. So really what you do is you try to keep busy, because it kind of seems like one of those long days, because you know results aren't going to come in until after the polls close at 8 o'clock. So I tried to stay busy at work and doing a few things, family things, and some stuff I probably put off because we've been campaigning since about, June.
Yeah.
And so, it was a good day, just kind of a relaxed day. We had a few things going on at work and exciting, and about 6 o'clock, you start getting real nervous and saying, okay, what's really going to happen?
Go, yeah.
You kind of have a gut feel that things are going okay, but
going to ask you. Did you have a feeling? Did your gut tell you anything as the evening developed?
Well, Andy, I've had a few campaigns. So this campaign was a lot different. I had a lot more people, I think, volunteers and people that called me and offered to help, and some people that just helped without asking, and it felt a lot different, to be honest with you, where we had just tremendous amount of volunteers out doing things, talking to their neighbors, making phone calls, putting up signs, doing all the things that you do in a campaign that a lot of them I didn't even have to ask, and they asked me, or they came to me, and so it felt a little different. So my gut, although I didn't trust it, I was like, hey, yeah, I've been through this before. Mm-hmm. My very first election experience, Andy, was a loss when I first ran for city council years ago.
Okay.
I ran and lost. And so smart people probably would have walked away and not tried again. But 2 years later is when I ran for city council.
Had any brains, you'd have been, all right, I'm done. That's right, it. Forget it. But here you are now, having served in city council for, how long were you on the council?
So I am in my 14th year. 14. So I'll be 14 years, yeah. Wow. So middle of my fourth term, so which will come to an end in January. So I'll have to resign at that time. And
so I remember when John Pike left, the city council then will pick someone to fill your spot, right? Isn't that how that works?
Absolutely correct. So it'll be the same process where people will be able to, any citizen of St. George will be able to make application and submit a resume, and the council will review those, and we'll have a meeting, and they'll vote on a replacement for my seat.
I actually watched that online. I wasn't there, but I watched it online because it was streaming live online. It was very fascinating. Is there, first of all, you talked about teamwork and being a team with the council and stuff. Was there a general feeling, a consensus of who should be appointed and how that all worked? Because I guess to recap, John Pike left, Michelle Randall was then appointed mayor, right, by the city council, right?
Correct.
And then you had to get another city council to replace her. How did that work out? Was it pretty easy or was it kind of tough?
Well, everybody has their own opinions and their likes and dislikes, and we all want to pick someone usually that will align with us more. So, easy in the process, maybe, but not easy in the decision, because there's so many great people out there. Truly, we had a lot of great people that applied, and replacing Mayor Pike was the same process where the council made the decision, voted and made the decision on who would replace him. And then we did the same thing once Mayor Randall had to resign her seat. We did the same process. So, it's a fun process, and really, what I've heard from the council members up until this point, a few conversations yesterday, is they're excited to see who applies, and they're keeping an open mind and want to know who wants to serve, and they'll do a great job.
I got to bring something up, Jimmy. Now, I'm competitive. If I lose at Uno, if I lose at, you know, Farco, whatever game, pickleball, whatever, I get a little upset. You know, male ego bruise, that whole thing. My wife is not. She's very non-competitive as far as that kind of thing. As a politician, you will lose. You've lost.
Sure.
You will lose. You know, when they were appointing the mayor, it was you and Michelle Rando. You sure. lost that appointment.
Sure.
How do you put that male ego, that competitiveness aside and move on? Because these are people, they didn't vote for you for mayor, but they are on the city council with you. You had to move on, right?
Yeah, and so I have the same competitive spirit. So to say it doesn't hurt a little to lose, I mean, no one likes to lose, let's be honest. And so so I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, no big deal. But what has helped me in the past is to realize that this is the American way. We can have robust debate. And we can put our best foot forward, and we may even be friends, but at some point, we have to choose one, right?
Yeah,
and so if we keep that in mind, and you can console yourself a little bit by saying, hey, the people made a choice, then you can try to analyze why they made that choice, and then maybe make some changes or try to figure out what you can do better to get there. So here we are. 4 years later, and if you look at those, it's been fun to kind of look at the numbers, Andy, and it's almost as an exact swap from 4 years ago when I then ran against the mayor, and she won, obviously. And this year, those numbers, the percentages are almost exactly the same.
That, really?
About a 10% flip.
So whatever that middle group is, they switched from her to you.
Yeah. Yeah,
and do you know why? Do you have a feeling why?
And I'm not really sure why. I have a little bit of a philosophy, and it's kind of a sports analogy. You're a sports guy,
sports,
Andy.
So yeah.
So you think about, we're all familiar with the Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid, and you look at that and you say, okay, he was the coach for the Philadelphia Eagles for a long time.
Yeah,
he never won a Super Bowl. Sent a lot. I think he was one of the most. He sent most players to the Pro Bowl than anyone else during his tenure there, but could never win a Super Bowl. Then he goes on to the Kansas City Chiefs. He's won what, three?
Yeah,
three Super Bowls.
Dynasty almost.
Yeah. And what's happened with the Philadelphia Eagles? They've actually won a Super Bowl since he left.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily. So you look at it and you say, sometimes it's just time to change the coach. And everybody's going to thrive. Even the coach thrives. So I look at it that way. I think St. George has got a chance to thrive. Not that everything was completely horrible. There's obviously some things I wanted to change. But and I think that Mayor Randall's going to thrive. I think that's my hope, is everybody's going to do well. Just like that analogy with Andy Reid, the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, everybody's gone on to do better, and I think that's what's going to happen in this situation. That's my hope.
Good attitude.
St. George goes on to thrive, so I'm excited.
Have you, I'm looking for inside scoop here. Do you have any idea on who might replace you, city council? Have you heard any rumblings or any names out there?
Again, the council's been very good about not getting ahead of themselves, and the couple that I've talked to.
I tried,
to,
Jimmy, I
yeah,
tried.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you know, my hope is that it's someone that kind of is in the mold that I've put forward, you know, someone that's conservative, someone that's willing to listen to the public, and someone that'll carry on what I hope is that legacy, if you will. But again, that's going to be their choice. I'll obviously have an opinion, but my thing is, I totally understand the council and their job and their role and really their authority, and they are the decision-making body, and I totally respect that, and I'm hoping to be able to work well with them and make sure each council member knows that I'm there to support them and help us all get, you know, that team effort to get St. George where it wants to be. So
you had the two incumbents at city council both win, Natalie Larson and Michelle Tanner. Can you maybe spend a minute, having been on the council with them for years now, your impressions of them and why? I assume you're happy they both won, yeah?
Sure. I've had a great working relationship with both of those council members. Obviously, we haven't always agreed. People can go back and watch and look at the notes, and we've voted differently on a few things. But the thing that we've, with those two council members in particular, and really all the council, I think I have this relationship with, we can disagree and still not have to, you know, have personal attacks against each other, which has been very good. And I would say that about all the current council members. But these two in particular, Natalie is someone I've known since, you know, her brother-in-law was a high school classmate of mine and a good friend. We were neighbors. And so I've known her my entire life. What I like about Natalie is she is not afraid to ask questions, which sometimes can be annoying if you're on that person, this person is being asked.
Come on.
But,
yeah.
But I love it. And she asks the hard questions, and she truly wants to know when she asks questions of staff or of citizens. She will ask really with the intent to know the answer. And the thing with Michelle Tanner is she is super conservative. She loves the freedom that's provided in the Constitution, and she consistently reminds us of our oath of office, which is a very simple oath of office, and we pledge to follow the Constitution of the United States and the state of Utah. And she is very good at reminding us of that when we make our city council decisions. So I've been very happy with working with the both of them as well as the other council members. So
one of the things you talked about last week when you were on the show, and Michelle Tanner actually came in and talked about this, is teamwork. Michelle said when she first got elected, she said I was kind of like a bull in a china closet. It took me a little while, but I did finally learn that teamwork is actually really, really important. You talked about teamwork too. Sure. What does that mean when it comes to mayor and the city council?
Well, and teamwork doesn't mean we give up our role or we say, hey, you take over. It just means that we're willing to look at that other person, listen to their thoughts and concerns, and then say, okay, how can we work this out? And we're not going to say, well, we're going to go over here and create this little group and try to attack that person or get rid of them or whatever it is. We're going to say, these are the people that are our team. We may have differences, but we can come together and come up with the best solution. I think any council member that you in our current council you would talk to would say they completely understand that every city council member on the St. George City Council has the best interests of St. George in mind. Now, the key is how do we work together so that we can get to a result that benefits the majority of the citizens in St. George. So teamwork isn't giving up on your individuality. It's how to apply that individuality as a team setting to get to a common goal. So
as long as you've been on city council, how often is the vote really close, a split vote, like a 3-2 type vote, or is it usually 5-0 or 4-1?
Yeah, we get accused of that a lot of time. Oh, they all vote together. But if you look at the vast majority of our decisions, they're pretty simple. What you know, you could take any five people and they would all agree, right? Yeah. Now, there have been a few issues along the way that we will have, a split decision. We've even turned things down as a council, but they're not a lot. Most of our decisions are mundane, pretty run-of-the-mill decisions. But there are times when we might have disagreements on things like most recently we can think about, certain bike lanes, which is okay. You know, there's some competing ideas there. There are things like on our budget, maybe where we spend money. Now, usually we work those things out in a work meeting where we've already, discussed these things and went back and forth about what's more important, and we've come to a common agreement in those work meetings about where the budget should go before we vote on the budget. But there are times when, somebody may feel like that's not really where they want to go, and they're more than welcome to vote against that and be different. That's okay. That's okay.
So, I had someone mention to me, I think my sister was talking about this at dinner the other day. She said, they said, who are you going to vote for mayor? And this person said, well, I'm going to vote for whoever is against growth. And my sister was kind of chuckled a little bit and said, well, okay, what could government do to, honestly, we live in America. Michelle Tanner has talked about it. Michelle Randall has talked about it. If you own a property and you want to build and it's zoned for the right way you want to build, that's America. That's what we do. And there's nothing the mayor or the city council can do about that, right?
Exactly. And so, we've heard this all the time, and we've talked about this before, Andy, as someone who is born and raised here in St. George, I lived in a place that was idyllic, and it would have been nice to keep it that way. And there's certain things that we've lost because of our growth that I miss, right? But at the same time, like you said, there are private property rights. Myself, I'm a private property owner. I have a little bit of farm ground in the Washington Fields. Mm-hmm. And people, we never want your farm to go away. Well, the lucky thing for them is in my lifetime, it probably won't, because I've chosen to do that, right?
Yeah.
But if someone else were to choose, one of the first things I had to do when I was elected to the city council as a farm widow down in the Little Valley area, they were trying to rezone her farm ground. And all the neighbors were like, no, we love the farm. You can't let her do that. And she called me up and she scolded me. She really did scold me and said, how dare you? My husband has worked his entire life here, and I have the opportunity now to develop How can you let everyone else that has come and developed, and now you would try to tell me I can't develop my farm? Yes, it's hard for me to let it go, but in reality, she'd be making more money than her husband made in his entire life farming there. And yeah, it was just a wise decision for her. And I'll never forget that, because it was like, oh, yeah, I really can't tell her to, what to do with her private property.
Yeah, so, good point. And, you know, I drove through the fields. I think it was last night or night before last. And I'm like, hey, it's funny we call it Washington Fields because it's not a lot of fields left anymore. Sure. A lot of houses and things out there now. But I mean, you got the country song, Daddy Won't Sell the Farm and all that stuff. You think about this stuff. Yeah, that's cool. But like you said, how do you go to someone and say, you know, you can't do that. You got to get up at 4 a.m. and farm the rest of your life.
So and that's how I started my day today. Andy's feeding the cows just because I like to. My sons can do that, but I like to go do that. That's my CrossFit. Instead of going to do CrossFit, I'll go and feed the cows. I need to feed more cows, obviously. But
you're in pretty good shape, Jimmy.
But what we can do, Andy, is we can make sure that we have a proper plan, a master plan that says, here's how we want our community to look when we're done. That we can do, and that we've kind of bought into as Americans in this whole thing of planning and zoning and saying, hey, we want an organized city that says, here we have people who live in neighborhoods, and here we have commercial, and here we have multifamily or whatever it is, and we have a well-planned community. That we can do, and that we should do, and some people even disagree with me there, but that's just proper planning. We can do that, and that's my goal, is to make sure that we have smart growth and that we're prepared for it, where we have the proper infrastructure versus just, you know, you can't just say build anything you want. Right. On the same token, we do have to let people have, you know, exercise their private property rights.
Well, I was thinking about this analogy. Somebody once said, well, being a mayor is like being the driver of a bus that has no steering or no brakes or something like that. But your weapon against that is the future plan, right? Sure. Looking 20 years ahead. How important is that as you think about being mayor of a city, knowing what St. George is going to be in 2045 and 2053 and you know, off in the future?
Super important, and I don't want to be repetitive, but that master plan is super important for us to look at and to adhere to as much as we can. And when we make changes to that, it needs to be done in a very thoughtful and systematic way. When we've revised that master plan in the past, it's always been with a lot of community input, not just from builders and developers, but from the community at large, to where we can have all the information we can get and the best minds working on what's going to make St. George the most thriving community once we're no longer a building economy or always growing. What do we want it to look like? And that's super important. And that's where the public input, that's where the experts come in. And again, it's not just builders and developers who I love and appreciate, but it's people at, just in the community. It's people that have a vested interest. It's business owners. It's everyone who has a stake in the game, and just our day-to-day citizens who have a stake in the game. What's going to work best? How do we modify that master plan? And then let's stick to it as much as we can. And when we make changes, it needs to be done very thoughtful and very methodical.
Get some smart people to figure each in their own area. And I've always tried to do this with this show. I've tried to get people that are smarter than me. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. You know, I try, and unfortunately, my areas of expertise are sports and music. Well, that doesn't really work very well on a political talk show. But so you get smart people and get them to say, okay, this is what's going to happen here, or this is what I believe is going to happen here. And then you let them advise you and ultimately make a decision. That sounds like a good idea, Jim.
No, yeah. If you're the smartest person in the room, you need to find a different room. So
I like that.
Yeah,
thing.
So we need, you know, I don't know all the answers, but I know people that do. And the more the merrier in my view, that the more input we can get, the better off we're going to be, and the better off we're going to make the right decision that's the lasting decision that's for the best of St. George.
Very good. Okay, we're going to talk about some things coming up. I do want to spend, after we do our weather break here, I do want to spend some time talking about you, your personal life, your family, and where you're at with that. You told me before we went on the air, you're getting very close to being an empty nester. That's going to be a weird
deal. Yeah, crazy.
And then we'll also talk about, I wanted to talk a little about some of the major issues, you know, water being, of course, the first and foremost on people's minds. And
perfect.
It's interesting, and I don't want to get too into it just yet, but I have city leaders tell me, well, you know, it's up to whatever the Water Conservancy District tells me when it comes to water. And I've had the Water Conservancy guys say, well, we just advise them. It's up to them to make the decisions. And I'm like, is this a passing the buck? Or is, I mean, how does that all work? And so we'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, we're going to do a quick break, a weather check here on KDXU. I have a couple of gift cards to Angelica's Mexican Grill right now. So text me, 435-467-5842. Text Angel to 435-467-5842. I'll give away these two $10 gift cards to Angelica's Mexican Grill. I have a whole pile of them. I'm going to keep giving them away every single day until they finally let me retire, which who knows when that's going to be. Again, text Angel to 435-467-5842. We're on with Jimmy Hughes, the new mayor of St. George City. We'll be right back after this weather check.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Our Angelica's winners, Jody and Brad, congratulations. You guys can come pick those up here at the radio station. I've got, I think I have like 10 or 12 more. So over the next few days, I'll be giving away lots of those. Jimmy Hughes is with me today on the Andy Griffin Show. Jimmy won convincingly, I would say, by, I don't know, I guess if you go percentage, it's like 55% to 45% or something like that. But pretty much close to 2,000 votes, right?
Yeah, a little over 2,000, yeah.
For the win. What did you think of the turnout? Did you feel like, you know, the off-presidential election, the turnout, it's usually quite a bit lower. What did you think?
Yeah, it's always a little lower interest. It was really on par with past off-presidential or off-year elections where there's not a lot of state offices or anything else, mostly just municipal, which is unfortunate. Municipal governments where really where all the action happens. These are a lot of decisions that affect your everyday life. You know, we're talking about roads, power, water, all those things. You know, it's the place you really should spend most of your time if you're researching candidates and getting involved. So I think the voter turnout has been a little better with mail ballots, but is it worth the cost? I mean, you think they probably sent out countywide 120-something thousand ballots, and how many did they get back countywide? I mean, not
20.
Yeah.
No. Well, countywide.
Well, county. Yeah. So I think in St. George, it's somewhere in the 50,000 number they send out, and we got back 22,000. So.
Yeah. 40-something percent.
Yeah, yeah. So if and you know, historically, getting 40% is good, or even in the 30s has been better than a lot. But whether or not there's an argument out there that it's not worth the cost to send those ballots out when nobody's sending them back, but I don't know.
What do you think would have happened if it was just in-person voting? It would have been a lot lower, right?
Probably a lot lower.
Yeah.
My problem is I'm a traditionalist. I love going on. Don't tell anybody this. I turn my ballot in on election day just because I just like that whole thing of election day is just the excitement and just knowing that it's going to happen all in that day. But I get it. There's a push to try to increase voter participation. But I think it just takes effort. I mean, we need to make sure that we understand how important it is and make the effort and sometimes make some different arrangements so we can vote. I think it's good that when people maybe have to be out of town or what have you, they can vote, you know, by mail or however. But I'm just a traditionalist. I wish we still went and marked the ballot. Or
I would say, for me, I actually like the mail-in just because of the convenience of it. And you can do your own research on your own time, which I always felt like, I mean, voting because I like someone's name or whatever. I never liked that kind of voting.
Yeah.
By the same token, I would say, voting in person is pretty American. They need to, I mean, when they started the mail-in thing, now they've got it down to one place to vote in person, and I don't like that. Like, look, if you're going to still have that be an option, let's have a few places around the area to go vote.
Yeah, if you're going to have people vote in person, you got to make it convenient, a little more convenient as well. So I will say that, though, that this year has been much better than in years past where these mail-in ballots come dragging in weeks later and still 2 weeks down the road, you have no idea who won. And then it just gives that room for people to think that there's something nefarious going on, whether there is or not.
Yeah.
And so I like the fact that they said, hey, 8:00, your ballot needs to be in. Voting is over at 8:00 on election day, regardless of postmark, regardless of that you forgot or whatever, it's over. Yeah. So I do like that. It was a much better system this year. I think Ryan Sullivan at the county does an excellent job. He runs a great operation there, and all of his people there are fantastic. If you haven't had a chance to go by and see that, they offer, you know, to let you see that process, and it's fantastic. They do a great job.
I believe so too. I think they really do a nice job. And I've told the story many times on the show, but a few years back I had mailed in, maybe dropped it off, whatever, but they actually called me and said, hey, your signatures don't match. Is this your ballot? And I was able to confirm, yes, that's how I voted. That gave me a little bit of confidence in the system that somebody's actually watching, making sure you're really signing these things. And I thought that was important.
And you can actually go on and track your own ballot and make sure that it's been received. So if you were worried that it didn't get received, you could go on and say, hey, yep, they received my ballot and it counted. So super important.
All right, about 7 minutes before the next break, I wanted to get to know Jimmy Hughes a little bit better. Jimmy, tell us about yourself, where you grew up, what high school you went to, what college you went to, and how you ended up now as the mayor of St. George City.
Yeah, so I'm a Dixie kid. I grew up right here in St. George, down on the corner of 500 and 500. So,
really?
You know, I could look up the road and see the St. George Temple and the old hospital. That were the big iconic buildings as I was growing up. And
I think I had three or four of my kids in that hospital. So,
And then eventually we could look down the street the other way and see what was then Hanson Stadium and is now the Greater Zion Stadium, which was built. The East Elementary School has, you know, been taken over now by the university. That's where I went to elementary school.
Okay.
I walked there from my home 2 blocks away. I was able to walk to Dixie Middle School and Dixie High School, you know, just a couple of blocks away until I was old enough to be able to drive. And so I graduated from Dixie High School and then spent a little time at Dixie College before leaving and serving the LDS mission in Brazil.
How's your Portuguese, by the way?
I can still speak Portuguese.
That's
a little
good.
Bit.
I'm impressed.
Sometimes I have to stop and think a little bit, but you know, I can still do it. It helped. I had a daughter that served there, so I was able to brush up on it and make sure I could communicate with her when she returned. So she'll tell me that she speaks better than I do, but what, we'll let somebody else decide on that. But yeah.
Okay.
So, good times. And then when I got home, I moved actually to California to, you know, my wife says I have to quit using that. But back in my early campaigns, I used to say I followed the country song and went to California to find women, whiskey, and gold.
At this point, had you met your wife?
I had not. So I was able to eventually move back to Salt Lake. The company I worked for, I was in the banking business and mortgage and real estate appraising. They moved me to Salt Lake, and Salt Lake is where I met my wife.
Okay.
And we started our family there, built our first home in Draper, actually, on the banks of the Jordan River, actually. And then eventually we're able to move back here to St. George.
And what's your wife's name, by the way?
Her name is Tawny, and she's actually from Vernal.
Really?
So, yeah.
My boss is from Vernal.
You know, anywhere you go, the crazy thing is, small town, Vernal, Utah, right? Because of its oil industry, there have been so many people that have at one point lived there that everywhere I have been, I'm not kidding, it doesn't matter, we've been on a cruise in the Caribbean, we will find somebody that has a Vernal connection. So, crazy thing. But, yeah, met my wife there in Salt Lake, and we started our family, and we moved back here 20-some-odd years ago. I never really left. I mean, obviously my family was all here, so I always had kind of a home base here, but was able to move back here and buy the family ranch, one of the family ranches, and continue on that legacy, which is kind of in my blood. It's good times. We have 5 children. Two of them are married, and then I have one left at home.
So you have grandchildren?
I do. I have 3 grandsons, all boys.
Nice.
And that, I know people say this all the time, and they told me that, oh, you are going to love that. It's the best. Yeah. I would 100% agree and even add another 100% onto that. That's nothing like those grand boys.
If we could have just skipped having kids and gone straight to grandparents, that would have been perfect.
Yeah, it would save a lot of stress, right?
Absolutely. Okay, now tell me about Hughes Mortuary.
So I made a career change. I had told several people over the years that there was something I wanted to do. You know, I think I got into my first career because I wanted to make some money.
Yeah, of course.
In the banking industry. And I said, this is something I want to do. I would love to do that. But you know, usually you have to be born into that. It's usually family businesses.
Definitely.
They are passed on from generation to generation. And, you know, the stars just aligned, and one day in a weak moment, I met someone and we made a plan. Actually, we were at a local restaurant and wrote it on a napkin, and we bought an existing.
Okay, that sounds like cliche.
I know.
Mapped it out on a napkin and everything.
Huh? I am not kidding you. We sat there and it was a very poor plan. I'll tell you that. It was not a great plan. And we just jumped in. We bought a mortuary that someone had started, and it was not really flourishing very well, and had several partners at the time, and eventually those of all decided it wasn't worth it. It is a 24/7 365 day a year job.
Definitely.
And yeah. You might miss someone's birthday, you might miss Christmas, you might, because those death happens at whatever time. And so I'll, you know, my wife and I are the last ones standing, and so we've now 14 years now have been doing Hughes Mortuary, and it's a business that people don't just automatically say, hey, we're trusting you with one of the biggest things in our life, the death of our parents, our grandparents. You have to earn that trust, and it takes
Definitely,
time.
Yeah.
The industry standard is, it says you'll know you're going to make it after 10 years. So we might be able to make it now. We're past the 10-year mark. It's been a lot of work. This is something I tell people. I'm not sure if I would have known the amount of work that I would have done it up front. But now that I've done it, I'm super pleased. We have built a great business. We have a great team. I've got some great employees that, you know, obviously I'm here today. I'm not dressed like a mortician today.
I don't know that I've ever not seen you or I've ever seen you not in a shirt and tie. So.
Yeah.
He's got a polo on.
Yeah.
Still looks nice, though.
Yeah. I'm even overdressed. I was out taking down campaign signs, and then I had to start by feeding the cows this morning. So, right. No, we've been super blessed. I can't say it any other way. We've had a lot of people that have put a lot of trust in us in the care of their loved ones. And that's a big moment. You get one chance, and it can be generational, where where families will, you know, turn to you in the future, or they won't. And so we talk about this all the time in our businesses, that we get one chance, and it's the little things that matter, you know. So we've tried to do that, and it's a career of service. We get to serve people, and you know what they say about service, and it's true. When you're really, you get the most of the benefit when you serve others. You know, you can call it a Christian value or whatever you want, but it doesn't matter what religion or what your thought process is there. When you're serving others, you get the benefit, that the feeling you get, the satisfaction you get when you're serving others is just irreplaceable. And then, hey, I get to do that and get paid for it. And I have made lifelong friends that I'm so grateful that I've made through this career and through serving people in our community. It's been completely fulfilling and overwhelming. Not to mention that I've been able to take care of a lot of family members, including my own parents, which I can't imagine missing out on that opportunity. Yeah. It's the highlight of being in the mortuary business. I'll never regret that. So,
I got to ask you though. Most kids, I want to be a quarterback, or you know, guys, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a rock star, whatever. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say I want to be in the mortuary business. And yet, you said it right here. You said it's something you wanted to do.
And to be completely honest, I don't know if I knew what I was getting into, but I really feel like. I think a lot of people in this industry say that it's like a calling more than a career. But I will say, my wife and I will be driving around sometimes on date night, where we've made a late night stop at the hospital as part of our date night, because when it was just us before we had employees, and she'll look at me and she would look at me and say, this is not what I dreamed of when I married you.
No. So romantic, Jimmy, and picking up a body.
No, but it's that is one of the other benefits is I get to work with my wife quite often, and she's a very important part of our business, and it's a lot of fun to be able to spend some time with your wife. Actually, two of my daughters work work at the mortuary.
I was just going to say, has it become a family business now?
Yeah. My two oldest boys, they were like, hey, that's too much work, Dad. We'd rather go do construction or something like that. That stuff being on call all the time isn't good. So, but my youngest boy, now he quite likes it, but he's grown up in it. He was pretty young when we started. So, so it's just natural to him. So
when I was in college, we were desperate for money. I'd just gotten married, had no money, and I actually got a job, and this was in Provo at mortuary. I can't remember the name of it now. I should remember, but, and I worked as they called me a mortician's apprentice or embalmer's apprentice.
Awesome.
And, I was there. I helped to set up for funerals and stuff. I would occasionally help with the embalming process. Every third night I was on call. I was the body pickup guy every third night. I did not like that at all.
Yeah.
That was not a fun part of the job, but really the hardest part, Jimmy, and maybe you can address this, the sadness all the time of, I mean, you talked about it. This is such a key moment in people's lives. The constant just crying and sadness of people. That's eventually what drove me away from that job. It wasn't the other stuff. It wasn't the bodies. It wasn't the pick. It was that people were sad all the time, and I couldn't handle that. How do you handle it?
That's certainly a concern with everyone in the business, and everyone deals with that in a little different way. What I've tried to tell my guys and what we try to do is we have to find adequate time to decompress. Mm-hmm. And then we do try to compartmentalize that, not try to take it home, which is really hard to do because you're right. Every day you're faced with something that is life changing for someone else. And we really personalize it sometimes. And really, sometimes it's really hard not to, I don't want to ride a motorcycle. I don't want to cross the crosswalk. There's so many things that in the life-ending experience that you can really get yourself wound up. So what we do is we try to just, keep that as separate as we can. Now, I tell people all the time, maybe someday it'll catch up to me and I'll be like, I'll be a crazy person. But yeah. No, and then I think something else that helps us here in this area probably more than a lot is there's a deep religious, mm-hmm. Affiliation with a lot of people here. And so when you can compartmentalize that in a religious sense, and you've been able to make sense of it, if you will, it makes the process a little more less devastating. But I will say, Andy, that I have been through some experiences that have been life-changing for me and that will never leave me because they are very tragic and sad. But at the same time, on the plus side of that, it helps you to realize how precious and good life can be and is. And maybe you can reprioritize what's important to you. So I do get that reminder every day. If there's a positive side to it, is hey, maybe those things aren't as important as you thought they were.
Yeah.
If your life were ending today, is that really that important? And I think that's good. Sometimes even in politics, when I'm dealing with maybe somebody that's a political adversary, can I say, hey, how important is this really in the grand? If one of us walks out of here and we something happens, how important really is this?
Yeah.
And then we can kind of say, okay, maybe this is really life-changing important, or maybe it's not. So if that makes sense.
Good perspective. Absolutely. All right. We have about 10 minutes left. I got to get a quick commercial break in. I did want to talk about water. And, it was interesting, Jimmy. We'll talk about the Northern Quarter a little bit. Every candidate for city council and both of you for mayor were like, we need this.
Yeah.
There was not a dissenting voice, which I've been fully supportive. I really think we need it too, but I thought there might be someone that would go, well, no, we didn't know. Everybody was for it. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Quick 2 minute break.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
But one thing I know is this guy sitting in the room with me here, Jimmy Hughes, loves St. George like I do. And he is now, starting in January, going to be the mayor of St. George. What do you love about St. George? Well, just real quick, because we got a couple things I want to ask you. But what's your favorite thing about this place?
Everybody talks about the weather. Everybody talks about the scenery. All those things are great. But really what drew me to come back was all the people.
Yeah.
Just the people that are here, our way of doing things.
Can we call it Dixie spirit? Is that good?
Yeah, it is the Dixie spirit. And there's no better way to explain it than that. It's that community spirit. You know, there's a lot of people. I mean, I have a lot of close friends, but you have a lot of people that are just acquaintances too that you may not see all the time. But when you see them, it's almost like you are friends because you're all part of the same community. You have the same goal of, you know, being able to, you know, go through life and pursue your dreams and live in a beautiful place. And really everyone here generally has the well-being of others as one of their priorities, right? It's not just it's all about me. And that's part of the Dixie spirit is saying, hey, it's not just about me. It's about my neighbors as well. And it's about my community as well and how we can all thrive together. So no, that's my favorite thing. Of course, I have family here too. So it's that draw because there's a lot of beautiful places in the world. And there's a lot of places with great weather, but yeah, it's hard to beat this place.
I agree with you. I actually had one of the candidates that came on for another position. They didn't win, but I asked him about the Dixie spirit and he said, well, it's that grit and grind. And I'm like, you haven't been here very long, because that's not what the Dixie spirit is. I mean, that's part, a small part of it, but that's not really what it is. So.
Yeah, those people in Dixie have a lot of grit and grind, but it's that community spirit.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about, first of all, real quick, Northern Corridor. Like I said, every candidate that came on said, yeah, we need this. The alternate proposal is turning Red Hills Parkway into some kind of belt route or going one way downtown. They just seem, I just can't see those being realistic.
No, unrealistic. And you know, I know there's a lot of people that like the reserve. Hey, I like the reserve. But the bottom line is this has been a long planned road and it needs to happen. You'll virtually find every elected official in Washington County. I haven't found one yet that would say, yeah, no, we need to look at something else or we need to scrap that. Our responsibility is to have proper infrastructure. And to say that doesn't need to happen would be a dereliction of our duty, I think. So,
Well said. And I have a lot to say about that, but we don't have time for that right now. So let's talk about water a little bit. Reuse water, obviously, is starting to become very important for here. Does something need to happen? Like I said before the break, you have Zach and the water people saying, well, we advise the cities, but it's all up to them. Then I have the city people say, well, we only do what the water people tell us to. So where does the buck stop on this one, Jimmy?
Yeah, sometimes we like to say they. They said, then we got to figure out who they is. But, you know, really it does come down to that. And Zach's been very good about saying, here's what we think you need to do as a city. Now, they will come forward with some policies and present them to cities and say, this is what you need to do. Now, the balancing act comes along when you have to say, well, every city needs to do that. Because if every city doesn't, then, hey, we're saving water here just so these guys over here can use more. So, it's a hard balancing act that the Water Conservancy is trying to do. My thing is we just need to be making sure that we all have all the same information and that everybody is knowing what the water situation is. And that's where I felt like in the past, maybe we haven't done as good enough job of saying, you know, let's talk about the specifics. Here's the acre feet of water we have in general. Here's what we use every time we build a house or what we think we're going to need for these certain businesses. And so here's the time when we're going to run out if we don't do something different. Or what are we doing that's going to be different? Yeah. Now, there are things like we've been working on that reuse program, putting in secondary water system in all the new subdivisions for over, I think, 12 years now or more, if I recollect. So that's a key issue, and that's going to help us to be able to take that water that comes from the reuse plant, put it back into reservoirs, and get it into that system so we can use it for outdoor watering.
Yeah.
Other water projects that are going on, and that's something that is the task of the Water Conservancy District, is to find and develop new water. Now, we've gone away from talking about the Lake Powell pipeline, and I don't want to bring up a sore subject, but my philosophy is if there's water that we have a right to, then we should be going after that. And then we can talk about cost, and we don't want it to, you know, overwhelm us in cost. And new growth should always pay for itself. So maybe that new growth is what has to pay for those things. But we should be exploring every water opportunity we have. Maybe that's my, you know, agriculture background or you know, ranching background is water is a precious resource, and there's only so much of it. And if there is only so much of it, how much will you pay for it? And I think that water is always going to be very valuable. Especially in the desert. So we should go after all the water that we can. And when we talk about Lake Powell, you know, people will say, well, yeah, but there's not that much water in Lake Powell. Well, Lake Powell was built to store water when we do have storms. and when we do have wet years, so that right. we can use it on those other years. So, I'm very hawkish on water. Let's find it, develop it. Reuse is becoming a bigger deal. We do have a great regional sewer plant. Plant down there that we're going to be able to put that water, rather than just letting it go down the river, we're going to be able to put that back into use. So that's all of those things are super important.
Jimmy Hughes, the mayor, what do they call you? The mayor-elect, I guess.
Yeah.
Where you are about 8 weeks away from becoming officially the mayor.
You can just call me Jimmy until then.
Let's call him Jimmy.
And even after, call me Jimmy.
Jimmy, thanks for coming on today. It's been a pleasure talking to you and looking forward to the next 4 years, my friend.
Thank you.
We're out of time, folks. I'll be back tomorrow. Hey, tomorrow's Friday. That's pretty cool. Open lines tomorrow. Thanks for listening.